at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 8, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show covers politics, history, and the state of the zeitgeist with a liberal dose of listener calls. At 9 on Alternative Radio, Yale professor of philosophy Jason Stanley outlines how fascism works. And at 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Peace, Love, and Soup talks to Portland native Renee Watson about her realistic fiction and poetry that centers on the lives of black girls and women. Today in Portland, we'll see a partly sunny day with a high in the mid-40s and an air stagnation advisory. People with respiratory sensitivity are advised to reduce or eliminate outdoor activities. The advisory is in effect until 4 p.m. on Wednesday.
Thank you.
Coming up next on KBOO, a special presentation of Sojourner Truth with journalist Bernice Young discussing sexual assault on low-wage workers.
Well, yeah, democracy is coming somehow, somewhere, somewhere elsewhere, I don't know. Okay, everybody be happy, it's a new year, it can't get any worse, it's bound to get better. Well, it could get worse. Trump said that when he noticed that he had nuclear weapons at his command, he said, well, what good are they if I can't use them? That was creepy. But then again, the guy is creepy. We got a creepy president, and the Republican Party has turned into a creepy thing. Beyond its ideological weirdness, it's turned into a damaging force in American history, and things are dark. But I want you to give me and the leading intellectual components that listen to this show, all 17 of them, I want you to give all of us some positive feedback, not about KBOO, not about this show, not even about me, but rather about what can be done and what will be done and what needs to be done and all that kind of stuff, because really, we're going to have a hard year and we're going to need a lot of support, all of us, and we're going to need to hold hands and kumbaya the heck out of it, you know, got to do it. And it is New Year's Day, and I don't want to darken your hopes, but I would love to hear you. In fact, I know I can get from you a few positive notes of helpful, hopeful thought. And if you're not able to do that, well, then I guess the dark stuff can come pouring out. So, it's New Year's Day here at KBOO. This is Joe Uris. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, 231-8187, here on KBOO, 90.7 FM in Portland. What do you want to do? What do you want to say? Well, let me start out by pointing out a weird thing that happened. I didn't do a thing last night. I stayed home, watched the television, and what I saw was strange. That is to say, there seemed to be a unity of songs that were positive and, dare I say it, liberal and critical of the president. Now, that could be my mind projection. It could be just a coincidence. Or it might more likely be the reaction of the entertainment elite to the facts of this administration. So, you know, there's that. Then there's these other things. We are still pouring carbon into the air. The coal industry is revived by the idiot in charge. There is a lot of things that need to be done in the environment. The oceans are being polluted constantly. There's the great Sargasso Sea of stinking plastics. There is much to be done in the air and in the water and in the land. And at the same time, there's a lot of signs of totalitarian reaction going on in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, and of course in the good old USA. So I don't want to darken your day too much, because it is, after all, New Year's Day, which is sort of this kind of weird holiday. Everybody goes out and does whatever they do on New Year's Eve, and then everybody lies around. Some of us get hungover. Others of us just simply get depressed. And a few get hopeful and happy. What I'd like to hear is emphasis on the hopeful and happy part. Love to hear from you, and love to know that you're alive, well, and ready. Because this is going to be a year of struggle. This is going to be a year of important decision-making. This is probably going to be a year, I hope it's going to be a year, of repudiation of foolishness. And I think that's possible. I think it's real. And I think you want to be part of that. So let's go to some people. I don't think there's more than 7 or 8 of you out there that aren't hungover, you know. So let's hear from a few. Oh, here's Linda. Linda, let's hear from you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
And you wanted to hear a couple of positive things? Well,
yeah.
Things are so outrageous, it's made a tremendous amount of activation among people who normally just let things slide by.
That's true.
It's woke them up. It's poked them. So that's the good thing.
I think it is. Actually, I think one of the things that we have...
big motivator. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that happens to people in this culture, probably, and in many cultures, is we take things for granted. We think everything's going to be work-outable, and we have a sense of the future being a positive thing. And then along comes something weird, something totally unprecedented. And I do mean unprecedented, where we end up with a clown who's kind of a fascist, who ends up with the presidency because of a failing system. And I do think it is a failing system in many ways. But, look,
no,
people are waking up.
That's a big positive. And the second thing would be, even a broken clock is right twice a day.
That's true. I remember a joke from my... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all I have to say, but go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. No, I remember a joke from my childhood. There were a lot of jokes attacking people of low intelligence in my youth. Totally politically incorrect, but here we go. What did the... I'll change it. What did the silly fellow... do to see time fly? Why, he threw the clock out the window. Okay, let's go to Jeremy. Jeremy, save me.
I'll save you from bad jokes by giving you a less bad joke.
Okay, go for it.
And this is useful, because it's kind of a generic joke. You can insert any group of terrible people you want as the butt of it. I used to listen to a punk station when I lived in Oakland to get free tickets to concerts I almost never went to.
Uh-huh.
But they often asked you to tell them a joke. So I changed the generic joke to fit their favorite evil group. So how many record executives does it take to tile a bathroom?
I don't know. How many record executives does it take to tile a bathroom?
One, if you slice them thin enough.
Ooh, that is really kind of cold, man.
You know, Trump cabinet members, Obama cabinet members, you can put anybody you want in there.
Yeah, no, I can see it's one of those put anyone here kind of jokes. And it probably,
anyone.
Yeah, anyone, and it's probably appropriate to a lot.
Didn't want me to praise KABU, but it's a show I rarely listen to for reasons I'll spare you. But I happened to turn into Prison Pipeline last night, and... there was a guest on there who, if she's not wrong, then things are really changing in criminal justice, which I've kind of suspected. I don't mean really, really changing. But I think she referenced some Scandinavian country, I think Norway. The maximum sentence is now 21 years, and they've really gotten away from, you know, retributive justice, I think was the word she used. And I don't know. I mean, to be honest, the reason I don't like Prison Pipeline is they act like anybody in jail, you know, it's just some sort of accident. And I think there's a fair amount of evil in the world, mostly by people who had evil levied upon them when they were children, but they go on to do evil. Well, I had some evil levied upon me, and I'm hoping I haven't gone on to do too much evil, ergo I'm not in prison. Anyway, her argument, she lives in some sort of collective in the South where people coming out of jail live with people trying to close, prison abolitionists,
uh-huh.
which I used to be, but I'm not anymore. But I'm close. Anyway, she was arguing for love as the only answer to people committing crimes. You know, the idea that there's reasons that people commit crimes, and that if they're responded to with something other than vicious retribution, maybe they'll stop.
Well, I don't know about that. There are in my experience, there are some people who are really bad.
Yep.
I mean, that's not a lot, and it's certainly not the people that are in jail now. We know how that works in terms of the socioeconomic system and racism and so on. Listen, I want to thank you for the call. Give some other folks an opportunity.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. I think we'll go with Edie. Edie, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
I'm really grateful that people are having the courage to get out of their defense mechanisms that make them in denial, discounting, you know, self-justification, and instead deal with the discomfort. So they want to think they're good people, but how can you be a good person if you're allowing all these bad things to happen? And they're getting out of that discomforting place, not by denial and distraction and essentialism and consumerism, but instead of being courageously honest and look at the problems and stretch themselves and use their minds more than they're used to dare social rejection or ridicule, and to get out and to think differently and to talk differently and to associate with different people and to little bit by little bit more and more courageously work to make the world better, to give up their old ways of thinking, to give up some of their old dreams, and instead be compassionate and empathetic. We are having people who have never protested before, never public hearings, have never stood up against the police or written letters, have never shown up to testify. And they're doing it. And they've never confronted, you know, family members at the table. And they're doing it with more thought and more caring and trying to see things from different perspectives. And that is incredibly encouraging for me. I see that the scientists are having more courage to get out of their most conservative, you know, get along to go along. I see that more and more people are wanting to become journalists when they're under more attack, more viciously, more dangerously. And we have even a book that I suggest people read. It's called Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. Why We Justify Foolish Beliefs, Bad Decisions, and Hurtful Acts by Carol Tavris and Elliot Aronson. So the first part of the book title is Mistakes Were Made. And it just talks about how that's in the criminal justice system or science industry or government or military and racism, you name it. But people are beginning to have the courage to be honest and caring. And we're having the most incredibly creative artwork and creative protests and creative ways to do direct service, to solve problems. We're having more people sign up to be street medic, this training with Rose Hip Medical Collective this weekend. We're having people showing up tomorrow at Joanne Hardesty's swearing-in ceremony, and let's hold her feet to the fire and keep it up.
Yeah.
We're having folks going against the Portland Business Alliance commitment to LNG and Jordan Cove fracked gas, and saying, no, get out of that alliance, change your marketing and stand up to it. We're having folks who are becoming vegan. I mean, we're having folks who are finding ways to help folks who cannot bicycle or walk or stand in the cold very long, have other ways of transportation or getting things done, and small businesses. We're doing more to confront toxic masculinity. we're doing so much more for people to stretch out of their denial and to recognize internalized white supremacy and bit by bit make amends and change the way they act. So these incredible courageous acts at the individual level, and you know, journalists, Amy Goodman, just, and even the kindness of your engineer recognizing my voice and greeting me, you know, these decencies, these courage, these people talking across the party lines, being able to say for the first time in, you know, anyone they've ever heard, say, well, maybe capitalism is not such a great idea. These are big changes that we can encourage and celebrate and support.
Well, I think you're right, Edie, and I really appreciate I appreciate your call. I'm gonna let you go, but you've given me a little bit of hope. Thank you very much.
Good day.
Good day.
Should all acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should all acquaintance be forgot and old anxiety? For old anxiety, my dear.
Kind of weird New Year's songs, and I don't mind playing them. I think it's important, you know, that song Old Ang Syne, that's a Robert Burns poem. Bobby Burns, a wonderfully active poet out of Scotland, and his life was an incredible challenge to the assumptions about the British, what do you want to call it, aristocracy. And in fact, I think it was Sean Connery, you know, the original James Bond, as it were, who refused a knighthood, saying essentially, no, I'm Scots and I'm not a part of your empire except in the sense of physicality. And that shocked a lot of people, and I thought it was a good point. The imperial assumptions of England closely are, I'm sorry to say, mimicked by the upper class in America. We all need to understand that this system of white colonialism did a lot of damage in the world, not much good, and that we in the United States, need to understand our national historical role in all of this. But it's a new year, and maybe some good things will be coming on. And I'm actually thinking a little bit about the enormous number of people running to be president of the United States on the Democratic ticket. Their numbers are more than 20, and a lot of them are very good. Not many of them probably will last that long in the great contest, but it's a good indicator. Now, the reason why there's so many running is because it's clearly an opportunity, because a lot of people assume that almost everybody is pretty tired of the Trump. But let's go to the phones and talk to somebody more rational than us. John, you're on the air.
Well, I'm looking forward to this new year because of the new Congress, House of Representatives coming in. I know that I'm not going to expect a miracle, but the ones that are coming in, I think, when they rock the establishment, especially, you know, Pelosi and company, even though they might lose, at least they're going to show the public, you know, all the crap that's coming, that's around. And a lot of them are women, and a lot of them, you know, have families, and also working class women too. And so this is going to be really juicy, and they're not afraid to call anybody out. They don't care if they're Democrat or Republican or whatever. They're going to come out swinging, even though they might, you know, not accomplish much and might be, you know, what do you call it, deadlock or something?
Yeah.
You know, gridlock?
Gridlock.
It's going to wake up these corporate journalists, too, because when they get, attention and they get interviewed, they're going to just say, well, you guys, what are you doing? All you guys are just taking your paycheck and trying to look pretty on the camera. I have one question.
Okay.
Since you were a history professor at one time.
Yeah.
This happened a couple weeks ago. I was walking my dog in the park, and there was another guy who was walking his dog, and somehow he got, well, I don't know. The conversation turned into politics, which I didn't really want to get into. And so he was saying, well, you know, we're not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic. Now, okay, so I said, you mean our votes don't count? You know, I mean, people vote, and that is, well, we're a constitutional republic. We're not a democracy. So could you kind of, like, elaborate between a constitutional republic and a democracy?
Sure. I mean, that's an easy one.
I didn't know what to say. Yeah, well, for me, it was a little bit like, huh? You know, please. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure. And I want to thank you for making a call. This is a bit of an academic question, but also not. The founding fathers, and remember, there were no founding mothers, nor were there any people of color, no native people, no brought here Africans, none of that in the founding process. Their goal was to create a republic in the model largely of what they thought Rome in its classic phase before it became so degenerate and turned into an empire. Their goal was to found such a thing. Consequently, for example, the term the Senate. They believed that there need to be enormous numbers of checks and balances on the system. And at that time, in that government, they didn't let ordinary people vote. You had to be landed. You had to be white. You had to be male. These were really serious restrictions since they knocked out more than half the population. And in that process, they created even more checks and balances, particularly to get states that were slave states into the Union. They, for example, had to count slave people as a percentage of a person. And their numbers, though they could not vote or participate in the process, would be counted toward creating seats in the legislature, in both the House and the Senate. at the same time that that was going on, and this is really a very important thing, they created the Electoral College, which is a way to modify, limit, and conservatize the process, avoiding direct election. And that avoiding of direct election has proven to be a terrible thing. In 2000, it was a device used to manipulate Gore out of the presidency. In this most recent election, we in fact know that the Hillary Clinton, with a not great campaign and a lot of Russian interference and so on, nevertheless had 3 million votes more than Trump. And yet, because of the Electoral College, she did not win the presidency, and Trump did. This is one of the major changes that needs to be made. Now, there's a lot of ways to do this. The Constitutional Convention, a lot of people favor, but when you hold a Constitutional Convention, any proposals for amendments to the Constitution can come forward, and that can get incredibly weird and incredibly out of order, particularly when you have so much money thrown at these things. A better solution is for states individually to decide that they will throw their electoral votes on the side of whoever has the numerical advantage in the final count. That would allow no change in the Constitution, but it would still allow it to be a more fair contest. There are other ways of doing it, but that's the kind of thing that can happen and should happen. Anyway, here we are, New Year's Day. I sensed in the silly New Year's Eve parties that are put on the television on the general stations, particularly in the music they chose, a beginning of a very real resistance to the craziness that's going on in D.C. So I'm a little hopeful, because I see the popular culture often not as following the trends of government and leadership, but leading it in terms of people's awareness and thought. So, you know, and then there's this other thing. You never know where the tipping point is. And people have every reason to believe there's going to have to be a tipping point, because it's getting weirder and weirder and weirder. And the Trump is getting kookier and crazier and more scary constantly. So in the face of all that, there are a lot of opportunities. One of the things that has to happen, however, is that ordinary people like the few of you that are probably listening on this hungover morning, have got to be ready and able and to get out there and to make their voices heard in all kinds of ways, ranging from letters to the editor to walking or marching in the streets. There is one thing I think is very important, because it is a tactic that has shown itself to work and is far more moral than a lot of violent activity in this modern period of time. And that is nonviolent resistance. I really was very influenced by the thinking of pacifists in my growing up, my youth, and I really think it was valid, and I think it's an important point. If we go into the streets to fight, if we go into the streets to smash the fascists or whatever, we play their game. Then it becomes simply a game of numbers or a game of violence or tactics, rather than a showing of citizen solidarity, support, and concern. On the other hand, if we remain calm, if we act in a non-aggressive manner in the face of aggression, we increase our power immensely. This is just a thing. It's a proven thing in American history, in modern American history anyway. Anyway, I want to emphasize that, and I want to look forward to perhaps to a time when this will be happening more and more. Already we're seeing many more people out there, by the way, and already we're seeing the media doing what it always does, which is to misinterpret and go to the center. I don't know if you noticed it, even in the New York Times, there are ways that things are phrased that makes them less powerful, that creates a less significance. So our job is to make clear what's going on. Our job is to be out there and not to be filled with despair to the point where we just don't do nothing, you know? Let's go talk to Harry. Harry, you're on the air.
Happy New Year, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, I know last year. But anyway, it was KABU's 50th anniversary.
That's true.
And it was 1968. So what were you doing in 1968?
What was I doing in 1968?
Well, Frances called in, and she said she was a Portland State student. I was in a grade school at the time.
Ah.
So I was wondering, what were you doing?
Well, let's see, 68, I would have been, what, 28 years old? I had, let's see, 28. I was, for a while I was running a social, an independent social service agency in that year. I'd come back from Europe. I had a plan, my partner and I, to travel all over, but it got thwarted by my own illness. I came back to the United States. I think the first event that I saw, I was in New York City, on television, was the Tet Offensive. And I had already been, from way back, like, I don't know, 64, 63, opposed to American involvement in Vietnam. So I was an activist in that context. I had resisted the draft, made a living hell of my, of my, for the people involved, of my induction. I just didn't let them pull any of their nonsense, and the result was that I flunked. I was also already a conscientious objector, so that exercise was more an act directly of resistance to the war, more than a generalized statement about war, which was the CO thing. So, and I was looking for the next thing, and I think it was that year that I re-enrolled in university, this time for a master's degree in sociology, which I got, and later a PhD in urban studies / history, both of which were successful. And I actually wrote a couple of good books in there. If you're interested in them, you can go to the Portland State Library, and they have them, and you can read them. I don't want to tout them because they're old, and they're not.
What were the names of the books?
Well, the first was, what was the name of my first thing? I don't know. It was a neighborhood examination of the Lair Hill neighborhood, which had become the kind of epicenter in the popular culture, at least, of the hip movement, what were called hippies. Remember that term?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was very involved in a lot of activities there and wrote essentially a thesis describing what happens when a neighborhood is isolated and alienated and turns to itself to find and define its own community and its own culture. The other book, the PhD dissertation, was a lengthy examination of the famous, probably not famous to many people now, but the famous vice probe that won the Oregonian a Pulitzer Prize back in the 50s. And it was looking at the attempt by the Teamsters Union, the corrupt elements of the Teamsters Union, to move into the already corrupt Portland governing system and the gambling system and the other forms of vice that existed in the city. That was an exciting project for me to do, and it makes a pretty good read. I never looked, actually, for a publisher, but there are copies of it around, and certainly there's, I believe there's one at Reed College, and certainly there's one which has, by the way, been stolen several times and had to be reprinted at Portland State. So that stuff you can look at. And that one's called Trouble in River City, which is a corny name, but I couldn't resist.
Well, make sure you submit your books to the Library of Congress.
Well, we did. That's part of the way you protect your copyright.
Oh, okay, that's good. The next thing is, I heard some really terrible news about immigration in the last 2 days, most of them radio reports. First was El Paso, Texas. They said since October, the immigration has dropped 24,000 people, that's men, women, children, people trying to get asylum on the streets of El Paso.
Yeah, I don't know about the exact number, but that's true. That is part of the Trump strategy to stretch, to really put enormous pressure on local service agencies and so on, and just to simply dump people, as you say, in the streets in several places, but El Paso most notably. You're right.
But 24,000?
Well, I don't know the exact number, but I would think it would be around that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite a few. I didn't realize how many people were here trying to seek asylum. Also, the other sad news was they said 400 parents were deported without their children.
Yes, I believe, I don't know about the exact number, but I believe that's correct. I think that part of the phenomenon here is a race baiting and a viciousness toward persons of Hispanic heritage that Trump engages in. Ironically, of course, all his servants at Mar-a-Lago apparently aren't legal residents. There's some irony in that. But this is where he operates. He wants to stir up a lot of people who are very frightened of the appearance of new people, people whose first language is not English, which, by the way, is a tradition. America is a country, with the exception of Native Americans, ironically, where most, in fact, people came here without the skills of the so-called American English. This is a vicious, racist attack. It plays to a certain element of Trump's base, which is fearful of the changes that are taking place in our industrial production, the changes that are taking place in our economy in general, and the changes that are taking place in all kinds of ways in science and other areas. So, you know, what Trump does is he plays to the most reactionary elements in our society and doesn't educate, always lies. By the way, the number of lies he tells, numbers in the thousands, and it's just so routine now, he will say, he will actually contradict himself in the process of lying. So it's a really funny but bad situation. The thing about dumping these people in the streets of Texas is that it's cruel and that it's unreasonable. We also, of course, have had under Trump this decision to separate families and to put them in concentration camps around the country, in the process of which, of course, two children have died already. It's a very scary thing for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is when you crowd a lot of people who have been poor and who have been deprived of health care and who have been deprived of adequate diet, you dump them in large numbers into one place and you crowd them together, the possibility of infections, of communicable diseases, grows enormously. And then when you don't pay any attention to them in terms of health needs, that becomes even more a problem. So it may very well turn out that this Trump blocking of movement into the United States, by the way, the people seeking asylum are not breaking any laws. It's a process that's defined by our laws, in fact. So what's going on there is cruelty and viciousness. And the idea, I guess, if there is a rational idea, is to discourage people from attempting asylum. I don't think that works because the people coming here are victims of terrifying governments and terrifying gangs in Central America. By the way, again, the creation of those bad governments and the creation of those gangs have a lot to do with what the United States has done in Central America. So in the end, it's our bad game. Anyway, this is what I understand about that, and it's so inhumane and yet so characteristic of this clown in charge. You know, when I was a kid, my sister used to be afraid of clowns. You know, a lot of kids have that reaction to the weirdness of a clown. Well, this is a clown we all need to be afraid of. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Happy New Year to everyone.
Yeah. Let's make it sure that everybody knows this. It's a new year, and we should all be happy. At least we are awaking, and we are alive, and we are struggling, hopefully. So let's play another song. Ooh, it's old.
One minute to midnight, one minute to go, one minute to say goodbye before we say hello. Let's start the new year right, 12 o'clock tonight, when they dim the light, let's begin. kissing the old year out, kissing the new year in. Let's watch the old year die with a fond goodbye and our hope as high.
Okay, that's enough of that. Bing Crosby was a mean old guy, and he built a movie career on being a very religious fella. His family life, according to the tabloids of its time, was not exactly consistent with his charming image. He made a lot of movies with Bob Hope that essentially made fun of other countries and other nations. You know, we don't have a lot reason to be really proud of a lot of these sort of famous figures in our time, in our culture. Anyway, I wanted to play that because it's ironic. And I also know, and this is real from my point of view right now, hey, a lot of you probably a little hungover, probably a little sleepy, maybe sleeping, never mind this show. And calling in here might be more than you can handle. Certainly being here for me is more than I can handle. And I think that New Year's Day is one of those weird recovery moments. Everybody, even people who just sat home and watched the ball drop and so on, you know, it's a little bit weird. It's a little bit dark, and it's, by the way, quite icy out right this moment. And people are thinking, well, this also is an incredible opportunity. We will have a new Congress shortly. We are seeing changes in our city government. In fact, I think we have three women on the city council. I'm playing a little bit of the music of New Year's Eve because I want to, because I think it's ironic. And I want to be clear about this. There is no doubt in my mind that a nation awakened can make it good changes and can produce a more reasonable society. What do we need? Well, we need better representation, and that includes changes in the way in which our people are selected for office. We definitely need to acknowledge the climate change that's coming, and it is not hard if the powerful want it, to change the energy system around so that much of our energy, in fact, nearly all, can be produced by things other than nuclear power, things other than coal-driven plants. We can use hydroelectric, we can use wind, we can use water power. We got a lot of options, sun power, and all of that involves capital investment, and there's therefore those who want to just keep on keeping on making money are sometimes reluctant to do that. On top of that, we got this selected set of interest groups that keep denying or at least ignoring the fact that we're in real physical danger. Let's do another one of these songs. Let's do one from 1999. Let's look at a guy who's gone and who was a great figure in that era.
Even care. Say to 2000 party over roots out of time. So tonight I'm gonna party like it's 1999. I was dreaming when I wrote this, so sue me if I go too fast. Well, life is just a party and party's not meant to last. Worries all around us, my mind is just a
thing. Okay, all right. Prince is good, but gone. I want to outline some stuff that's coming up today, and I think I'm going to particularly talk about the first item that I've been handed. At 9 o'clock, right after this show, Alternative Radio has Yale University professor Jason Stanley, who wrote a brilliant set of books about fascism and propaganda, and he will be presenting how fascism works. It's not just the simple things of the simple assumptions of fascism in Italy or Spain or Germany. Fascism is a philosophy that has enormous appeal, and the ways in which it works he outlines. And I find his writings quite intelligent and very easy to understand. So whatever else you're doing, if you're just tuning in, you think, well, what is all this, you know, New Year's Day stuff, stick around for 9 o'clock and for Stanley. He's a really brilliant man. Let's go to Kathy. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Joe. I have a happy thought.
I would love a happy thought.
All right. Yeah, I've been thinking about that baseball stadium that they want to, you know, make the waterfront even more concretized, you
know?
Yes,
yes.
And feeling kind of depressed about that. And I opened up my Scientific American for December, and they have this incredible article. It's called Sponge Cities.
Sponge, as in
sponge, like as in sponge up, you know, water.
Uh huh.
And the idea is, there's this Chinese architect that's doing this all around the world, and so that you make your riverbanks into more natural things. So I was thinking, like, wow, if what instead of a baseball stadium, there was this beautiful park that also doubled as sponging up water, and apparently these things filter out toxins. And the idea is to make a whole system. And I was thinking, well, you know, we're working on our water systems because for fish restoration. But if we thought about it as the whole system, the whole metro system, you know, fighting climate change, and it could be beautiful, you know, it doesn't have to be painful to go against, you know. And I was thinking about, it would cost money, but, you know, we have the best water in the world thanks to some forward-thinking people a long time ago that did Bull Run Water. We have a beautiful park system because of forward-thinking people a long time ago. Here's our chance.
Well, I think I don't know much about what you're talking about, but I think it's, if it is as you say, and I have no reason to doubt you, this is really a cool idea. I think that
look it up, Scientific American December.
Okay, I can do that. I will do that, in fact. I think that it's really interesting. One of the things that's happening in kind of in a parallel way, as we develop more and more of our weird technologies, we're also developing a lot of very creative ways to change things for the better. And I think you're describing just exactly that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for reminding us of these things. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, you're welcome.
Hey, so let's see. It's New Year's Day. New Year's Day is a weird holiday. I don't know. Is there anything one does for New Year's Day? I mean, is there a thing? Any kind of thing? I don't think it's a thing. I don't even think it's a church thing. I think it's just a kind of a hungover thing. And a kind of, what did I do last night? I feel so bad about it thing. Or I feel so good about it thing. You know? It's more about a requiem for the recent past than it is really about the future. But I would suggest to you that we are looking at a time, an opportunity, when we are more clear-eyed, more aware of the problems we face, more certain of the dangers of fascism that have gripped this country in a weird way, and that we, all of us, will be getting together in various ways, using various media and direct action to make things much better, not just here in Portland, not just here in Oregon, not just here in the United States, but worldwide, because the threats that are being faced have become more and more powerful and a little bit more scary. And I don't think we want to sit still for it anymore. I think we're all ready to get up, do what needs to be done in our lives and in the world. And in terms of that, I want to emphasize this, I really do think it's very important that the struggle be formed and take place in a nonviolent way. It doesn't mean not loud. That loud's fine. It doesn't mean not funny. Funny's fine. It doesn't mean not demonstrative in multiple ways. But it does mean, and I'm really concerned about this, that we not form up into little kind of gangs, left-wing gangs, right-wing gangs, etc., such that the media can describe all involved as and be dismissed as bad people. Let's go out to Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi, it's me again.
It's you again. Okay.
It's just a wisp of something when we did a remodel where I work out at Gateway.
Uh-huh.
Oh, about 2 years ago, I heard some talk that there was a requirement for certain, we might have to put in permeable sidewalks.
That's not a bad idea.
So I think the city must have something on the books, maybe for new construction. If anyone out there knows more, that would be...
Well, that's a very interesting idea. I don't know much about it. I don't know anything about it. I think that one of the things that... I'll tell you a story that's not directly related, but several colleges years ago, when they were building new buildings and creating new lawns and so on, discovered that if they waited until the students found the paths that worked best to go from building to building and then put their concrete walkways on top of that, it would work much better than if a bunch of architects decided arbitrarily on the pathways. So in a way, it became a kind of a people's project. But the idea of having sidewalks that probably would cost a little bit more, but they would absorb water and hold water and release water, it's really kind of a cool idea, particularly if it doesn't get too slippery.
Yeah, well, surface water is our big issues anymore. So they are getting some creative stuff out there. So like I said, if there's anyone who knows about the new construction, it'd be nice to hear.
Well, it would be nice to hear that. And thanks a lot for the call.
Confirm it or not. Okay, and thank you.
Yeah, you know, regarding this baseball stadium, if we must have it, I really think that it should be, the team should be the Portland Protesters. Imagine a major league team, Portland. Or how about the Portland Wet Sox? I like that one. I like that one a lot. But honestly, professional ball, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, is a way for very wealthy people to soak up a lot of our money. It's probably a lot better if we pay due attention to the amateur sports in our community, and that we eschew these things. Now, this is not an attack on the Portland soccer scene, which is kind of cool, but it is kind of a concern of mine that we tend to occupy vast amounts of land at the service of wealthy individuals who want to see men and nowadays women bashing their heads together. So I'm kind of dubious about the plan. Now, baseball, I like baseball a lot because it's kind of a slow game. It's got a certain rhythm. And I'm running out of time, and I want to all of you, I want to wish you a very, very happy new year, and I want to urge you to join joyously in a struggle for a better America.
It's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock, and coming up next on Alternative Radio, Yale University philosophy professor Jason Stanley outlines how fascism works.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place in Portland. The film hosts the path of two combat veterans from the Iraq War as they live with post-traumatic stress, the lack of effective treatment, and their search for healing. This is a crowdsourced event, and tickets are currently available for purchase. There will be a brief Q&A following the film. Again, that's a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place, 340 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Fascism thrives when it's contrasted with a version of capitalist liberal democracy.